I'm normally Bethel's fire chief, past fire captain, firefighter, been with the department, the fire department for 28 years. They asked me to come and fill in this role of a city manager until they find a new city manager. We are having our Bethel community meeting on lead and copper in Bethel drinking water, and we've got a panel of really wonderful people here tonight to answer a number of questions. We have Chase Nelson with Dowell Engineering tonight. Cindy Christian, she's raising her hand there. She's our environmental program manager for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. And Jonathan Bressler, he's a public health specialist with the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. And we're all going to be sharing information with you, answering your questions, and hopefully wrapping up at a timely time this evening. So thank you. I'm going to kick over to Chase Nelson here, and he's going to discuss a little bit about Bethel's water system and the issue that we have had here. So I'm going to, without further ado, shoot it over to you. So thanks, Chase.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Bill, and thanks for being here, and I welcome questions at any point. I guess we would ask that you come to one of the mics if you have a question, just so that the radio spot can pick it up. So if you could come to one of the mics if you have any particular questions.
I think we can pass this one around, so you don't even have to leave your seat if you have a question.
All right, sounds good. Yep. So as Bill mentioned, I'm Chase Nelson. I'm with Dowell, a civil engineering firm in Anchorage and Fairbanks. We serve the city under a term contract for all engineering needs. So we're involved with water quality stuff and subdivision reviews and all that. So we are engaged with this particular issue with lead and copper in the drinking water. So I'm just going to give a little bit of an overview of what's happening and some of the things that we think might be the possibly one of the causes. And then I'm also going to talk for a minute or two about some of the preliminary recommendations that we've come up with that we're sharing with DEC to try to come up with a plan of what we can do about this. Okay. So the lead and copper rule requires all public water systems of a certain size to take lead and copper measurements out in the distribution system every 3 years. So last fall, we did do a lead and copper sampling, and we did come up with exceedances of the federal action level. So we saw higher lead and copper in the distribution system. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's coming from the treatment plant. We saw high levels out in the distribution system at a number of the households in the city subdivision. So we saw high readings. We tested again here just a number of months ago, and we did see a difference in the results. So we were really kind of questioning what, why would that be? So I'm just going to share kind of some of the things that we've noticed that could maybe at least explain a little bit of some of the exceedances we saw last fall. So water leaving the city sub water plant has in the early 2010s and then this year has been recorded as 0 parts per billion lead, 0 parts per billion copper leaving the plant. It's just at the fixtures. As Cindy can probably attest, it is very rare to have lead and copper in raw water before it's treated. We rarely see that. I mean, maybe, I think Cindy, we said we've seen it one time in Alaska in the last how many years?
30 years.
Last 30 years, we've only seen naturally occurring lead in a public water system one time. So it's not usually in the raw water. It's what's happening out in the distribution system. And what we mean by that is, so the water goes out the pipes, and then it goes into everybody's households, and it has contact with copper fixtures and lead solder, and in really old houses, actual lead pipes. That's not the case in Bethel, but lead solder would be a case. So, you know, we do know that it's very likely to be out in the distribution system. It's not what's happening at the treatment plant itself. But we are just looking at ways, okay, how can we reduce lead and copper for the end user. So there are certain things we can do at the treatment plant that'll help protect against it. So something that my engineering firm started to do right away was we came out in January, we were out again in February and March to measure various things in the water that would give us a sense of how, essentially, how aggressive the water is. Everybody talks about pH, and that's one measurement of how aggressive a water is, how acidic or basic it is. But there's other things that we measure called the Langlier and Reisner indices, which would give us an indication of how likely that water is to basically grab ions from copper and lead and pull it into the drinking water. So I really don't want to get too technical or anything, but Langlier and Reisner indices are things that we calculate with the water, and it gives us a sense of how likely it is to pull stuff into it, which is what's happening. So we did measure high Langlier and high Reisner indices, showing that the waters are very aggressive. So something else that happened last fall with, we had the high measurement last fall. Last fall, we brought the Institutional Corridor Piped Water Project online, which basically over the course of a couple months, we doubled how much water was being produced at the city subwater plant. With that doubling of the water, it took a couple months for city operations to figure out the new injection ratios for the chemicals that we currently use. So there was a little bit of balancing and equilibrium before we really found out what we need to inject to meet the new demand. So there was a little bit of figuring things out last fall. By this spring, though, we had our heads around injection ratios and all that. So with the Institutional Corridor Project coming online last fall, we did have a little bit of a figuring out things phase. So that was also happening. And one thing else that I'd like to point out that's unique with Bethel and other Arctic water systems is the circulation. So, you know, because we have to protect for freeze, all the water circulates. It circulates in the mains. It circulates in the service lines that go to the house. All this means that a lot of water is being exposed to fixtures and pipes and all that, versus in a Anchorage community or the Valley or Kodiak or Southeast, they're not circulating their water. So you guys have a lot of water that's exposed to a lot of pipes just because of the circulation for freeze protection. That is something that's very unique to cold regions. And Bethel in particular, we circulate water faster here because everything's above grade. We shoot to circulate the water at least 1 foot per second versus communities like Kotzebue and Fairbanks that have below ground pipes, we shoot for 0.1 foot per second. So in Bethel, we're moving a lot of water very quickly because of the above ground pipes. Makes things worse. Following the positive readings in the fall, the city did engage us right away. They were asking for our recommendations, and we came out and did a number of monitoring. And we came up with a couple recommendations that were floating by DEC now. We need to get DEC's preliminary approval on our recommendations to move forward with any of them. So one of the things that we did recommend is that calcium carbonate be added at city subwater plant, which will help to kind of calm the aggressiveness of the water and give it more minerals so it isn't seeking minerals and ions to pull from copper and lead. Calcium carbonate is the most common ingredient in like Tums. It's used in a lot of municipalities. It's a very common additive that will basically help cool the water off. So we came up with a recommendation for a dosage rate and all that, and are working with DEC to get buy-off on that right now. I think that's pretty much it for the things that I wanted to bring up. We are working towards a solution, even though I do also want to point out that the most recent testing, we were back below the federal action levels, and the solutions that we've proposed right now what could be put in place regardless of whether we're above the federal action levels or below. You know, these would be solutions that would help bring it even further down, since we're not at zero at a lot of the monitoring points right now. I can take questions right now. I know that Cindy is going to talk more about kind of the regulatory side and also just kind of lead and copper and what a homeowner could do to reduce their exposure. And Jonathan's going to talk more about that too. But I can take some questions right now. Yep, yeah, just grab the mic so that the radio can pick it up.
My first question is this aggressive water that you're talking about, it doesn't have any particular danger to humans' intestines or anything like that. It's just only in the iron and copper pipes that it's traveling through. Is that correct?
Yeah, okay. Maybe I could have done a little bit better job explaining that. You know, so pH is one measurement of, like, how acidic or basic a water is. But there's other things that contribute to a water's I don't have another term other than aggressive. Maybe Jenny or affinity to corrosion potential, potential to corrode or something like that. And there's other things besides pH that impact that. Total dissolved solids and alkalinity and temperature, you know, these all affect a water's affinity and likelihood to grab minerals from pipe or from whatever it can get those minerals from. So in a water with a higher indices, Langlier and Reisner, doesn't really mean it's bad for you. It means it's going to seek out minerals to, like, balance itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. Leif or Jim? Quest? Yeah, come on. Mm.
I have a couple in. Excuse me, I am a scientist, so I kind of want to know the sampling scheme. So was it like a first drop, and even though the water circulated, does like a first drop sample matter? How many sampling points there were, that type of thing? And also, so the water is circulated, does that water then also get distributed to the non-piped houses just for, you know, a whole Bethel-wide safety concern? Mm-hmm. Does that water that is circulated then get piped out, or does it come straight from the plant that's treated and has a zero lead level amount? Mm-hmm. That's my
okay
question.
So we got two questions there. I think Cindy can maybe talk maybe more about the sampling plan and the requirements, and then I can kind of maybe say something about that second question. Yes, so circulating systems, you know, so the water is going to circulate through the mains and the service lines, and a lot of the service lines are copper, so it could be picking up copper or even lead solder in that service line and then going back to the main and going to the next house and the next house and the next house and just keep getting circulated around and around. You know, the water going to the haul trucks is directly from the plant, and what gets loaded up into the haul truck goes to a customer that gets hauled water in their haul tanks, and the same thing could be happening in those homes that get hauled water, just because it's the same water. You know, it has the same aggressive indices and all that. And that home that has lead and copper fixtures, or copper fixtures with lead solder, could be seeing the same thing. But we just don't have a requirement to measure lead and copper at the hauled houses. I think if we did, you'd see the same problem at those houses. Yeah. And then Cindy, maybe you want to talk for just a minute about the sampling requirements. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can come up.
Do you want me to just answer the question, or?
Sure,
we'll just so maybe it would be better if I just talk about the lead and copper rule and the regulatory requirements of the lead and copper rule. That would probably answer your questions. So the lead and copper rule. I'm sorry. My name is Cindy Christian, and I'm the program manager for the drinking water program at the state of Alaska. And we have regulatory authority over all of the public water systems in the state. about 1,400 systems, Bethel being a couple of those systems. And we are responsible for implementing the Safe Drinking Water Act within the state of Alaska. So the lead and copper rule is just one aspect of the Safe Drinking Water Act. But that's what we're here to talk about tonight. So the lead and copper rule is a little bit different than any other rule. Most other contaminants are measured as they're entering into the distribution system. So after the water has been treated and it before it enters into the distribution system, that's where we sample for things like arsenic and chromium and all of the other metals and everything. Lead and copper is different because it's tested in people's homes. And as Chase was explaining, this is usually due to corrosion in the system. And there can be a couple reasons why that happens. As far as sampling is concerned, you are correct that these are first draw samples. So what happens in a circulating system even is that when you get those instructions to collect the samples, if you're selected as a sample site, you have to let the water sit in the pipes for at least 6 hours. And after those 6 hours, usually people let the water sit overnight, and then you take the first draw that comes out of that. So this is really a worst case scenario. For Bethel, I'll just go over the sampling history a little bit so that you have a history. Samples were taken, it depends on where you are within the lead and copper rule as to how often you have to test. Initially, a system has to test every 6 months. So Bethel tested 20 samples in August of 2016. So there were 20 places in the whole distribution system that took samples. And at that time, there were no exceedances for either lead or copper. And when I say that, I mean there were no samples that were over 15 parts per billion. That is the action level for lead. We didn't have any exceedances. And we do measure what's called the 90th percentile for lead. Again, this is a little bit different. Most contaminants have what is called a maximum contaminant level, and that means the highest amount that can be in water before it's considered to be not safe to drink. Lead and copper is a little bit different. There is an action level, and that means that a water system must take action if they exceed that level, and that is 15 parts per billion for lead. So in August of 2016, the 90th percentile was 5.7 parts per billion. The city took another 20 samples from the same places. We do have to maintain, we maintain the same sample sites throughout all of these sampling. And at that time, again, we took 20 samples, and we again did not have any exceedances. And the 90th percentile was 6 parts per billion. So around the same, 5.76. So at that time, because there were no exceedances, the state was able to put the city on reduced monitoring. And what that means, you go to annual monitoring and you can reduce the number of samples that you take. And so 10 samples were collected in September of 2018. And at that point, we had 3 exceedances. So 3 of the homes that were tested exceeded the action level. And we had a 90th percentile of 33 parts per billion. So you can see that it kind of shot up. And for reasons we believe, what happened in Bethel is not unusual. There have been a couple of really large systems. If you change, the lead levels in the water are really based on the water chemistry. It's very complex, and I'm not even going to try to explain it. But it is based on the water chemistry. Usually when water is flowing through the pipes, the water will make a coating on the pipes. And that protects the pipes and the fixtures in the homes from actually leaching out minerals like lead and copper into the water. If you have a change in flow, if you have a change in the chemicals that are being added, or if you have a change in any of the water chemistry, that can affect the amount of lead that's leached from the fixtures. And that's what we believed happened in September. So working with the city and with Chase, we asked the city to go back in July of 2019, so just last month, and take samples from each one of those 10 locations and to do a source water sample. which they did, and we just got the results back last week, and again, we have no exceedances, and the 90th percentile is 5.9. So you can see it's all dropped down to where it was historically. So because all the water chemistry is probably back in equilibrium, you're getting some coating on the pipes again, and so that those levels have come down. So hopefully that answered your question about the sampling. I would like to just quickly draw your attention to this handout that, and there's more of them up here. And I will say that EPA, if you're interested, they have a lot of resources. As many of you know, lead has been an issue nationwide. You've probably all heard of Flint, Michigan, and you know, there's been various places in the United States where lead has been an issue. One good thing here in Alaska is we are not aware of any lead service lines. So that is a big problem out in the lower 48. That does not seem to be a problem for us. Most of the high levels of lead that we have seen at DEC have been due to fixtures in the homes. So up until 2014, you were allowed to have fixtures and lead solder, they were allowed to have 8% lead content. And after 2014, the content is 0.25%. So that is what is considered to be lead-free. So, but we don't have lead service lines, so that's a good thing. So if you look at this handout, you can see that there are various places within the home, so galvanized pipe, lead solder, faucets, that you can pick up lead in the drinking water if the water is corrosive. So again, I would just draw your attention to the middle part of this, and this is ways to reduce your exposure to lead. So even if you do have some level of lead in your home that is detected in these first draw samples, for the most part, you can do a couple of things to reduce your exposure to lead. One would be to only use cold water, because temperature, as Chase was saying, a higher temperature does allow more minerals to be leached from your pipes or your fixtures. So using cold water is going to reduce that. So if you use cold water to drink, not many people like to drink hot water anyway, so cold water to drink and cook and brush your teeth, things like that, making formula. The other thing is to clean out your aerator. So on your faucets, you know, you have those little screw-on aerators, and sometimes chunks of whatever, chunks of pipe, chunks of metal can get in those aerators, and they just sit in there because, of course, it won't pass through those small screens. And so occasionally taking that aerator off and, you know, cleaning it out is really, really good. If you're worried about lead content in the water, there are a couple of filters that are available that will, you can hook them right on your faucet and they will remove lead from the drinking water. And the other thing is to flush. So every morning when you get up, of course, remember these results that we're giving you are first draw samples. That water has been sitting in the pipes for at least 6 hours. So the longer the water sits still in the pipe, the longer it's going to have to leach minerals out, such as lead. So if you flush your water out for a couple minutes before you start using it in the morning, that's a really good way to reduce the level of lead in your home. So I guess in closing, I would just remark that the city is working closely with us and with Chase's group to address the issue. And again, the July sampling, the results were back down. It looks like this system has developed that coating again so that the levels are not being leached out. So I would just say that's, unless anybody has any questions. Yes, sir.